My name's Angie Zeltra. I'm a peace and environmental campaigner. And ever since I came back to the UK from Cameroon when I was about 23, which is 50 years ago, no, 40 years ago, I've been involved in anti-nuclear and environmental and human rights campaigning, including working with 10 other women to disarm a Hawk jet that was going out to Indonesia. Between us, we destroyed that Hawk jet and then were found not guilty after spending 6 months in prison, because of international law, because we were preventing a terrible crime, which was genocide against the East Timorese. And then a few years later, I did another action with three women where we took out an essential link of the Trident nuclear weapon system off New York Boyle. Again, spent 5 months in prison, but again, we were found not guilty, this time by the judge as well as the jury, because again, it was about trying to prevent weapons of mass destruction being deployed. Been to Israel, can't go back there anymore because we were doing non-violent solidarity work with the International Solidarity Movement and started the International Women's Peace Service in Palestine. Done lots of work all over the world, solidarity work and campaigns. And recently, well, some years ago, I wrote a book called Activism for Life, which explains all the lessons that I've learned from working and campaigning across many different issues because they're all linked.
Well, it's interesting you talk about the environment and nuclear, because now we see the green movement beginning to, certainly the Scottish Greens, embracing nuclear power. What do you make of that?
Well, it's totally crazy. We still don't know what to do with the waste. It uses up huge amounts of concrete and uses a lot of energy building them. They're a danger, they're a target if there's any war, as we've known from the Ukraine-Russia conflict. And it's all about the fact that our nuclear weapons systems require nuclear physicists, and there's a link between the military and civil uses of nuclear. And in fact, without civil nuclear reactors, we wouldn't have the materials and the personnel to run our nuclear weapon system.
Yeah, but it doesn't use fossil fuel. It's zero carbon. It's clean energy nuclear.
It's not zero carbon because if you just think about the amount of carbon and energy that's used to get the materials and to build the place and then to keep it going, and you think about how the resources are used at the end of the life to deal with what do you do when the end of the life of a nuclear power station ends? What do you do? How do you bury that waste safely for hundreds of thousands of years? Well, we can't do it, quite frankly. But it all uses energy. So if you do from the birth till the end of a nuclear power station, it uses more energy than it actually produces.
The action that you did with the Hawks, can you just explain what actually happened?
There were 10 women organizing it. Only four of us could be openly associated with it. But all 10 were part of the action and essential to it. Three women got in, and with hammers and hammered on the side and disarmed that
Well,
Trident
you
jet.
actually broke into a factory or a base or
But
what?
it was a Wharton. It was a British aerospace site, okay. And then one of us, myself, stayed outside in case that didn't work, so we could do it again. We produced a video with John Pilger's footage about what was going on with these Hawk jets that we were exporting to Suharto's evil regime in Indonesia. And I was arrested a little bit later on because we were all named anyway. My house had been raided, and I was then brought in with the others. And then we spent, as I said, the time in prison. Then we argued international law and the fact that we were preventing a greater crime and the jury found us not guilty.
You know, we're now in a situation which seems rather different.
Yes.
Activists who are doing similar things to disarm drones, to attack drone factories where they're producing the engines for the drones for the genocide over in Gaza, are being put away for much longer before trial. And also, they're being told, their barristers, etc., are being told, you can't use this as a defence.
Yeah, I know it's disgusting. We're going down the American route, actually, of trying to stop anybody who's doing anything decent and non-violent from being able to explain why they're doing it, which is against our rights, actually. You should always be allowed to say what your motivation is. And in fact, that's why you have a whole load of people outside the courts now saying to juries, remember, you can acquit on your consciences. The thing is that the jury, if they don't know why people did the action, they don't know that their conscience has to come into play in a way. So what we're having is a clampdown on our rights. It's getting much, much harder. And I mean, I think we in Britain have more activists, non-violent activists in prison than any other country in Europe. It's absolutely amazing.
I mean, it seems to me very strange that one is not allowed to talk about one's motive for doing something. So, for example, if I look across the street, I see someone with a wooden block, say, Angie, you know, beating you up, smashing you over the back, smashing you over the head, and I happen to have a gun in my hand, and I shoot them. Right. Now that should be that sort of thing should be known to a jury. In fact, it's crucial to know why you did what you did in a court case.
Course, it's called mens rea. You know, it's really, really important to know what is in the person's mind. Okay, but these are political trials. We are in a situation where we have a corrupt government, and they're trying to corrupt our judiciary to stop people. Now, the whole point of having a jury, 12 people that are not associated, is that they can put right what's going wrong in the court system if they hear everything and they know, because they can make a direct, they can say not guilty even when the judge tells you to that they are guilty. That's what happened in our Hawke action case, our Seeds of Hope action case. The Judge Wickham, Whackham Wickham, he was called. He was a terrible judge. He told the jury that we should be, you know, we were disgusting, and that if we didn't, if Britain didn't sell arms, France would sell arms, etc., etc. And he said to the jury, you must find these people guilty. And the jury said no. And they did that because we were able to tell them what was going on and what had happened with previous exports of these British Aerospace Hawk jets. And we had evidence, and we brought in evidence with José Ramos Horta, who later got the Nobel Peace Prize, and then became the Prime Minister once East Timor had become independent. He wouldn't let him speak, really. But the thing is, I was defending myself, and I just apologized in front of the jury and said, I'm sorry you weren't able to hear the whole story. And that brings me back to another point. When you go into court, you are told to swear, or on the Bible or on your conscience, that you will tell the whole truth. You will tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. But the thing is that when you're in court now and you're trying to tell the whole truth, you're stopped. And if you then mention, for instance, climate change, if it's a climate change thing like the Just Stop Oil people in court, and you mention climate change, you can be done for contempt of court. Quite frankly, those judges are in contempt of the court, are in contempt of the law, and we should have more lawyers standing up for the rights, because this is basic. In our system, we are meant to have the military, the judiciary, and the government, and they're meant to be independent of each other, and they are not anymore.
Well, Nick Georges, who I spoke to a couple of weeks ago from Palestine Action, he's in his 70s. He climbed up a crane in London. He also was involved in smashing some windows on the roof of a Elbit Systems factory.
Good for him, good for him.
But when he turned up at court, he was told that he had to undergo a strip search along with the other people who were going to appear. And the judge said, well, you're not allowed into the courtroom until you've had a strip search. So what really is going on here is these activists really are being treated as if they are violent maniacs of some sort. That there seems to be a drift towards treating non-violent direct action as if it's terrorism.
It's because it's being very effective at the moment. It's being very, very effective. And so we now have people in power trying to, as much as they can, put in the public's mind that these are terrorists rather than allow showing that actually they're people of good conscience trying to stop a genocide happening. And I think you're going to find more and more of this. We're getting into a real horrible situation of lies being told. No shame either. No shame from any of these politicians or people in power, corporate leaders. They lie all the time, and they try to make out that we're the terrorists when in fact it's them that are the terrorists. They are the terrorists.
Okay,
The
so
thing is, I think.
sorry, go on.
No, carry on.
I was just going to say, can you just tell us what you make of the current situation in Palestine and also the British government? I mean, we've got this human rights lawyer apparently as Prime Minister here in Britain.
Well, he might be a human rights lawyer, but he's not actually defending human rights. Maybe he did some human rights issues in the past. I think he once did the big case, didn't he, against McDonald's in his early days. What is it about these people that once they get into power, they change or they then kind of kowtow? I think part of it is that actually the Israeli surveillance, spying, computer know-how, etc., has got very, very strong. They've got a lot of technology now in a lot of countries. And so, for some reason, we're kowtowing to Israel the whole time. And then, of course, there's the guilt about the Holocaust, isn't there? And this whole anti-Semitism thing. Now, the problem is that it was a European problem. We're the ones that did the Holocaust in Europe. We're the ones that had the pogroms against the Jews. I've got Jewish family myself. It was not a Middle Eastern problem. This was not a problem that came from Palestine, but it's been exported there. It's very simple anyway, actually. It's not complicated. On any issue, you have to look at who is being harmed and how. And at the moment, in Palestine, in Israel, it is ordinary people, and it's the Palestinians that are suffering and have done for decades. And it is our fault, and Britain is totally implicated in this.
Now, you said you'd visited that part of the world. Can you tell us where you went, what you saw?
I've got a Jewish father-in-law, so my kids are quarter Jewish, I think. He would never go to Israel as a Jew because he said it was formed as a settler colonial state. This was a long, long time ago. And that it would come to a bad end because you should never dispossess local people, indigenous people, and set up your own state just because a so-called God told you to do it 2,000 years ago. So I went a long time ago when I was in my 20s with my kids to visit some relatives of his sister there. We never met a Palestinian there. I didn't really understand the issues. But then in the, when was it? In 2000, after the Jenin massacre, or just before that, when the International Solidarity Movement was starting, I decided to volunteer with them and help set up some of their non-violence training programs there. And going around the ISM in the West Bank near Nablus and Qalqilya and places like that with the ISM, Some of the Palestinian villagers said, it's all very well you coming and helping for a short while, but when you go away, we really get it with the IDF. They come in very hard. We need you here all the time, especially in the villages, not in the towns. And that's when I spent 6 weeks out there going around villages, and one particular village, Haris, near the biggest Israeli illegal settlement of Ariel, invited us to stay, and I set up with an Israeli, Jewish Israeli who had married a Palestinian man, Netta. We set up the International Women's Peace Service Palestine, and I worked there over 3 years at for 3 month periods, and saw the damage of the wall, the apartheid wall that was being built there, and the takeover of Palestinian villages and the horrors that they were going through there. Then, so that was in 2001 to 2004. I was arrested a lot of times just by being with Palestinians who were peacefully protesting about their villages being taken over or not being allowed to harvest their olives. And I'm not allowed to go back now. I was arrested too many times. But I think it was mainly because I was accosted by and assaulted by a really well-known Israeli settler who I had seen with his teenage girls killing a Palestinian. And I'd taken photographs of it, and he'd come up, slapped me around the face, spat in my face, and took my camera and destroyed the evidence. And I had rung up the Israeli cons, the UK consul at the time, and although I was arrested, I managed to get this guy's name, and he was arrested too. And I was told to come back to court to explain all of this. And then when I did come back to Israel for that, I wasn't allowed in. And an Israeli lawyer came to me while I was being held at the Tel Aviv airport for 3 weeks, I think it was. And I was told that basically he'd pled guilty, and so I could go home. I didn't need to go to the court. I said, what's he pled guilty for? Oh, destroying your camera. I said, and he'll replace the camera. I said, what about the evidence that was in that camera about the killing of this Palestinian? No answer. I didn't want to go, but I was deported. I was hauled onto an airplane and sat next to this Israeli guard, and then came home, and I've never been allowed to go back to Israel since.
I mean, a lot of people say this is actually a religious conflict that's
No.
actually exploded over there, and of course, it's getting far worse. Almost every year, and up till today, we've now got bombs raining down on Tel Aviv as well as other countries. So, what do you make of the aspect to it?
Of course, it's getting worse and worse. If you repress a people, like in Gaza, you keep them in this open-air prison under a siege, you're going to get people responding to that, aren't you?
Yeah, but
It's
do you blame
self-defense.
religion for the conflict?
No, I don't really blame religion. It's got nothing to do with religion. It's to do with power, and it's to do with settler colonialism. You could say that the British colonies that we set up were religious because, of course, they did have a lot of Christian missionaries going there, and they banned local religions and local languages and pushed Christianity on people in our colonies. But they weren't religious things. They were about power and exploitation. Israel, the Jewish Israelis that are mostly from European countries or America, want to go and live there. And they keep pretending that Jews anywhere else in the world aren't safe. I've got loads of Jewish friends here in the UK. They feel perfectly safe. They don't need to go to Israel to
Actually,
feel
quite a lot
safe.
of Jews are leaving Israel
Yes,
at the moment.
exactly. Yeah, loads of them are. They realize it's not safe at all to go and live in Israel at the
Yeah,
moment.
but I mean, there is this the issue in Jerusalem of the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Many of the Zionists want to actually demolish that mosque and build the temple for the Jewish temple, the Third Temple, on the same site. Now, that surely is a religious conflict there.
Well, that's the way that they're showing it to be, but basically they've been taking over East Jerusalem street by street for a very, very long time. Jerusalem was a beautiful city. It was one of the most beautiful cities I've ever seen. And slowly, slowly, the Jewish Israelis are modernizing it. They've still got the white stone, but they're taking away all the lovely windy little streets and the covered arcades and things like that, and slowly getting rid of as many Palestinians as they can from Jerusalem. They take away their Jerusalem ID. They don't allow them back in. They're pushing them out. What's going on in East Jerusalem is horrendous. But also what's going on in the West Bank is horrendous as well. I mean, they're just taking more and more. You heard what happened in Jenin when the army had just gone straight through that refugee camp with a huge road, destroying it. I mean, it's heartbreaking because the majority of Palestinians, just want justice. They just want a state of their own, which was promised to them by the UN when it was partitioned. Or if it could be one state with everybody having the same rights, human rights, it would solve an awful lot. But you have got Zionists there, not only your Jewish Zionists, but also Christian Zionists, who just want to take the whole thing over.
Well, yes, and Donald Trump seems to be behaving a little bit like that. What about the bring coming right up to the present? What do you make of the nuclear stance of Iran? Because at the moment they're being it seems being pressured to actually develop nuclear weapons when they in the past have said they don't want them.
Well, yeah, I mean, Trump should never have, or was it the other one, Obama before him? I can't remember, Biden. One of them, I know it was Trump, wasn't it, who went out of the agreement that they had with Iran not to.
Yeah, that's right. It's the Iran nuclear deal, which in his
That's
first
right,
term,
yeah.
Trump said we're going to leave.
Yeah,
I mean, it
exactly.
seems to me that the Iranians have got quite a nuanced stance on nuclear weapons. They say we have all the right to, and of course, very rarely mentioned is Israel's
Yes,
acquisition of
nuclear.
nuclear
Yes.
weapons, hundreds of nuclear weapons they've now got,
Yeah,
which
absolutely.
they started developing in the 1960s. There were some in the United States that didn't want that, but JFK was
Yeah.
assassinated. Anyway, so whilst the Israelis do have nuclear weapons, amazingly, Iran is saying we still maintain the right not to have them.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that they really want them in some ways. I don't really know. The thing is that it's so hypocritical. As you said, Israel is the one with the nuclear weapons. And Israel has leaders at the moment that are mad enough to actually use them. And we're not talking about that anymore. And the worry is at the moment with all of this nuclear saber rattling that's going on is that now in Britain, we've decided that we're going to have, more nuclear weapons. So US nuclear weapons are coming back to Lakenheath. But also, we've now heard, I think today, or was it yesterday? I think I heard yesterday, that at RAF Marham, we're going to have American planes there with nuclear bombs. So we're going to go back to having not only nuclear weapons on our submarines, but also on planes. And it's all going to be controlled by the USA. Now, what was the referendum about? It was about Britain having a say over its, this is ostensibly, it's not actually true, but that we would have a say over our policies and things, but we didn't want to be ruled by Europe. In fact, I didn't, I thought we should be staying in Europe, but a lot of people fell for this argument about autonomy. But we've never had autonomy. We just do what the US wants us to do. We're being controlled in a way. I feel we're kind of being colonized now by the
Well,
Americans.
you get lots of US voices on the BBC nowadays, watching and listening to the BBC. You quite often got a US voice interviewing a US voice on the British
Yes.
Broadcasting Corporation. And yeah, I think you're absolutely right. There's more and more influence of the United States Over here. But at the end of the day, with these non-violent direct action against things which are being used for war crimes, don't you think the point has now come, really, where it's actually the law of the jungle? If they're going to do a war, they're just going to do it, and it doesn't matter who tries to protest, they're going to sweep them out of the way.
That's what they're hoping. That's what they're going to do. And they're also trying to scare people to make protests harder and harder. And people are going to be scared. And this is time now for people to get their strength, to act in solidarity with each other in huge numbers, really huge numbers. We all need to be wearing a badge which says, we are all Palestine Action. We all need to be writing in and saying, we are part of Palestine Action. It is right for people of conscience to disarm and stop anything that is aiding and abetting the genocide in Gaza. And we have to stand together, and also all of the different movements need to come together because it's all linked: human rights, environment, climate change, nuclear weapons, militarizations, the end of capitalism. All of this, it needs to come together. So all of our social change movements now need to come together and say, look, we are on the cusp of destroying civilization, which hardly exists anyway, but we are destroying so much potential that the human race has, and we are destroying our capacity to live on this planet. Okay, the planet will carry on, but human beings will be back in the Stone Age. And we need to come together. We've got all the policies. All the policies are there. We know what to do. So we have to come together and stop buying all of this stuff, which is keeping these huge companies going. You heard about the co-op, didn't you? Who've now made said that they would not have Israeli goods on their shelves anymore. That's the way we need to go.
And what, finally, what advice have you got for those in Palestine Action who are now getting worried that they're being accused of being terrorists for painting things red, and are also facing extremely draconian measures by biased courts?
I just say well done, keep it up. As far as I know, last time I was speaking to some activists, they said that there are more people wanting to join Palestine Action than they've got actions for. So good on them. But I think every single organization now needs to come out in support of Palestine Action and say, we are also Palestine Action. It is right and proper for human beings to try to stop the genocide in Gaza and to point the finger at the real criminals, the real terrorists, which include our government that are aiding and abetting Israel.
And what is it about action that makes it so threatening to the Israelis?
Because when you go to these Elbit factories and you pour paint on them, or you smash their windows, or you blockade them, you are preventing those people from carrying on as if what they're doing is normal and okay. It's not normal and okay. It's wrong. When you go into a nuclear base and you disarm an aeroplane that is going to be flying off with nuclear weapons, that is trying to stop a huge crime. And it's in a way, it's a kind of upholding of international law. So yeah, we should be doing more of that.
Okay, Angie Zelter, thanks for him. Oh, maybe I could just ask, can people find and follow you online, etc.,
Well,
Angie?
I don't do social media. Sometimes at one time somebody set up one in my name, but it was not me that set that. I don't do
Oh
social
no, how
media.
annoying. Well, have you got any recommendations then?
Yeah, they should read my book, Activism for Life. They can find it on the Trident Ploughshares website, or they can get it from the publishers, Luath, Luath, Activism for Life.
And I seem to remember a wonderful little film in the 1990s called Nonviolence for a Change.
Oh, yes, that's right. That was a good film, wasn't it? Yeah, by Zoe.
And it's all about how actually, I mean, it's testimony from people like you, Angie, that the buzz you get from actually doing something and then facing down the system is actually a pretty positive one.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people are really disempowered, depressed. They don't know what to do. They know everything's wrong, and they're scared about the way everything's going. And they get depressed. And the way out of depression is to do whatever you can. Find people in your area that can come together and talk. We do two weekly vigils about in solidarity with the Palestinians, and there are about 30 or 40 of us in these little rural communities that go there. Just gathering together, even if you do nothing else, means that you're with other people trying to talk to them about it, and also give out information about what's going on. And that's important. So basically, action can help you deal with your depression.
Okay, well, maybe that one of the reasons that there's so many people suffering from mental health problems is the fault of the system, the government, and where they're taking the nation. Anyway, Angie
Yeah.
Zelter, thanks ever so much for joining us.
Thank you.